Morning, everyone. The credit or the influence for the lesson we're going to look at this morning is from a gospel meeting we had last year with Andy Cantrell. The series was Finding Our Purpose from the Past, and one in particular that really struck me and really was helpful for me was the one he did on September 9th, tied together a lot of good verses, and I'd like to present those to you this morning out of the Word. He titled his David, Peter, and Me, if you remember that, and I'm titling this, I Will Bless the Lord at All Times, coming from 1 Samuel, the 21st chapter. Psalm 34 is really the psalm that we'll look at, and related Psalm 56 and 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter. I'm not Don Hooten, he'll be back for you next week if you're looking forward to that, and but I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and thank you all for being here. So Psalm 34 is called a Psalm of David when he feigned madness before Abimelech. Most of the titles for that psalm, that's what you'll have there. Not everybody agrees with that, but that's what I tend to believe it is, and that is the occasion for it. And some think, you know, because David's actions weren't right, that how can he be delivered from God, and praise God for being delivered from this king when he didn't act right. And but we'll look at it in that God is delivering him, but from himself, his fears. And the Psalm 56, we'll reference this briefly, but if you're going back and looking, that's a related psalm. It gives another perspective from the incident. We'll start in what led up to the psalm in 1 Samuel, the 21st chapter, and see what the setting was and what happened. What was David praising God for delivering him from? So 1 Samuel, the 21st chapter, at verse 1, then David came to Nob to Abimelech, the priest, And Ahimelech came trembling to meet David and said to him, why are you alone and why no one with you? David said to Ahimelech the priest, the king has commissioned me with a matter, and he has said to me, let no one know anything about the matter in which I am sending you, with which I have commissioned you, and I have directed the young men to a certain place. Now therefore, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever can be found. The priest answered David and said, there is no ordinary bread on hand, but there is consecrated bread, if only the young men have kept themselves from women. Of course, David said he was on a commission from the king, and that was not true. And he asked for bread, and the only bread available was the consecrated bread. And even Jesus refers to this as it was not lawful for him to do. Verse 8, he says, now is there a spear or sword on hand? For I brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's matter was urgent. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, behold, it is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you would take it for yourselves, take it. For there is none other except it here. And David said, there is none like it. Give it to me. So again, he says the king matter was urgent. Again, he's lying there, and the interesting thing is what he does next. And at verse 10, David arose and fled that day from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. And we're told where the Goliath, the giant Goliath was from, was Gath. So David here tells some lies to the priest, ate bread he was not lawful for him to eat. He takes the sword of the giant Goliath that he had killed, and he goes to that giant's hometown of Gath. Maybe he wasn't quite in his best mind or making the best decisions there. And we'll see he is quite fearful when he gets there. At verse 11, but the servants of Achish said to him, is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of this one as they danced, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? They knew him. They knew who he was. He shouldn't have expected otherwise going to the Giants' hometown. David took these words to heart and greatly feared Achish, king of Gath. So he disguised his sanity before them and acted insanely in their hands, scribbled on the doors of the gate, let his saliva run down his beard. And Achish said to his servants, "Behold, you see the man behaving as a madman. Why do you bring him to me? Do I like madmen that you have brought this one to act the madman in my presence? Shall this one come into my house?" So David greatly feared Achish, and he had been so brave back when he did defeat the giant Goliath, and he was trusting in God at that time. And why is that failing? Well, we see in that fail here in 1 Samuel, the 21st chapter, and he ends up fleeing. At chapter 22, David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all of his father's household heard of it, they went down there to him. Everyone who is in distress, everyone who is in debt, and everyone who is discontented gathered to him, and he became captain over them. Now there were about 400 men with him. So he departs to this cave. Probably some time would have been have passed while he was there for people to find out he was there, people to travel there to him. And maybe it was in that state there that he penned Psalm 34 and 56. But we want to do a quick fast forward. What led up to this? Why was David, who has been so strong, a man after God's own heart, famously wrote, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me besides quiet waters." We'll do a quick fast forward and see when did David's life physically look like that ever? And we'll start, and this will be brief. Hopefully you're fairly familiar with the story, but we'll reference the verses if you'd like to look back at them later. But in 1 Samuel chapter 16, the first 13 verses, Samuel comes, and he's told that he's going to anoint the next king of Israel. And, of course, all the brothers come in, seven of them, and then it's David, the youngest. So he was anointed, the youngest brother. He wasn't even brought in by his father, Jesse. And people estimate maybe he was about 15 years old at this time when that happened. You can see why he might have not even been brought in anyway, because they would assume maybe he would have taken the kingdom right then and there. But so about 15, that's a pretty normal day for a 15-year-old, right? It happens a lot. No, I think that would be pretty wild day, and because he's not from a prominent family or anything like that, and then he's the next king. Travis lately is into The Lion King, and I'm reminded of a scene preparing this. Early in the movie, Mufasa showing young Simba, the cub Simba at the time, the kingdom, and Simba says when he's told he can't go to the Shadowland, he's told by his father, he asks his father, "I thought as a king you can do whatever you want." And Mufasa replies, "There's more to being king than getting your way all the time." And Simba says, "There's more?" That's what I think of when, a normal 15-year-old, when I was 15, my mindset, what I was thinking about was important. It had been about me, right? And it had been, that's kind of the natural response, hence the play on words there in that movie. But this isn't what brings David down. We're not revealed anything that gets to his head. He uses it boastfully or lord it over anybody. That doesn't do it. And maybe it's estimated about 15 more years before he actually sits on the throne. So he's told this, 15, sits on the throne about 30. Half his life, he's told he's king and he's not on the throne yet. And they may mess, people up, we see this sometimes in people's employment. If you're underemployed or you want to get to this position and you're just not there, and if you don't get there in the next year and a half, some people give up or are really upset about this. The very next thing, an evil spirit is beginning to terrorize Saul in the rest of chapter 16. And David is a musician. He calms down this crazy king Saul when he's being terrorized by the evil spirit. So he's next in line for the throne. He's a shepherd boy for his father, and now he's a musician to calm down Saul, the king. Chapter 17 gets into the story where he defeats Goliath, or he's sent there, and through chapter 18, Goliath is challenging the people. Jesse, three of his older oldest brothers are at the battle, and David's father Jesse asks him to send roasted grain, loaves, and cheese to the commander of their thousand, their leader, and look into the welfare of his brothers. If he has something to report, report that back. So the rightful king of Israel is running cheese into the battle. Chapter 17, verse 28, we'll read that real quick. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, "Why have you come down? With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart. You have come down here to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Was it not just a question?" So, you know, David's following his father's instructions and going and doing what he said, and he's accused of wickedness. We see far too often that sometimes the few are the ones who are doing the good when others are not, and of course this can be very difficult. These days, we're probably as opinionated, maybe more opinionated than we've ever been in our lifetimes. And it's not necessarily wrong, and it's not wrong to have opinions. It's not wrong to share opinions. But we see all too much the evil, and we need to be the ones doing the good. Whatever our opinion is, do the good. And that's what David did here. And he's had difficult times leading up to this. This is another difficult time. He was anointed in the presence of his brothers. And we could see here his brother's response to that. So he defeats the giant, Goliath. Chapter 18 at verse 6. It happened as they were coming when David returned from the killing of the Philistine that all the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul on tambourines with joy and musical instruments. The women sang as they played and said, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s." So overnight, this young David had killed Goliath, saved the people, and it was an overnight sensation. All the women were talking about, and even that isn't what brings him down. How would that do? How would we be in that situation? And you've seen it plenty of times, celebrities that become a national or worldwide sensation, and it brings them down far too often. It brings them down. That's David's life, and it doesn't appear to get him. It doesn't appear that he uses that. And he continues to act in purity throughout all that. So next we get to, he tries to be murdered by his boss, Saul, while he's playing music for him. I've had a rough day at work before. I was in a position where my boss wasn't my biggest fan. And that's tough, right? That is tough. Y'all probably dealt with some of that too, had bosses. And he never tried to kill me. So as tough as it was, my life wasn't in danger throughout any of that, but that was the case for David here. Okay, well then, the very next thing, David's supposed to marry Saul's daughter Merab. Now, of course, Saul does not have good intentions offering up his daughter. He thinks the Philistines will be a thorn to him. But at the time when Merab should have been given to David, she was given to Adriel, the Meholathite, for a wife. He's supposed to get married to this woman, and then she's given to somebody else. A lot of us are married here, and the wedding day is a great day, something with a lot of emotion, and you know it's kind of a crazy day. But what if that day you've been all these plans to, and the bride's marrying somebody else? That's always good. Well, Saul finds out about it. He decides, well, if you want to get married, David, Michael, why don't you marry her? That she may be a snare to him, is what Saul thought. You can't have me, Rabbi. Hey, just marry Michael if that works. No big deal. The dowry is just 100 foreskins of Philistines. That's not weird or anything either. He comes back with 200 and brings him to Saul. Okay, chapter 19. He's got his new wife now, and at least he can take a breathe. He's married. He can take a breather here with his new wife, and he has somebody to help him, right? That's one of the blessings of marriage is have somebody there to help you. Well, at chapter 19, at verse 41, you see what his new, there's not a 19 and 41, 20 and 19:11. And Saul sent messengers to David's house to watch him in order to put him to death in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be put to death. He's here with his new wife, and she has to let him down at night to save his life, and no idea of when he can come back. But he's got a best friend. We know probably the story. He's real close with Jonathan, and I can help him make it through with that strong friendship he has, right? Jonathan is Saul's son, the guy who wants to kill him, and his hate for him, even Saul throws a spear at Jonathan, his own son. So Jonathan has this grand idea that he's going to go out and meet David in the field, and he's going to shoot some arrows, and if he shoots it and tells the lad he's with, come closer, the arrows are closer, then that's the sign to David that it's safe, he can come back, and if he says no, go further, he shoots him further, then Saul still wants to kill him. And so, they meet that day, and this is right after Jonathan had been attempt on his life to kill him because he supported his friend David. And he cried to the lad, is the arrow not beyond you? And of course, David's heart would have sank. They both wept. At chapter 20, at verse 41, when the lad was gone, David arose from the south side and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. They kissed each other and wept together, but David wept all the more. Jonathan said to David, go in safety. And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went back into the city. And the next chapter, there's chapter 21 where we began. That's David's life. And we did it in a very fast forward mode, but it's his real life. That's what he went through. That was his green pastures. Do you blame David for in this moment where he was tired of running, he wanted to be home, he wanted to, maybe he didn't necessarily even want to sit on the throne, but he didn't want to have an attack on his life every day, have to always fear that he was weak, exhausted, and he's tired of this. He wants just for once to be somebody else, maybe, not be David, the future king. Haven't we done this as well? Haven't we gone along with sinful behavior to avoid embarrassment as a Christian? Maybe it's drank something, handed you in a cup to get away, escape for a little bit. Was it in a moment that somebody was just so pretty and you made a decision you wish you wouldn't have done. Maybe we were critical in a derogatory way of somebody that did have different opinions as us. Have we labeled heart problems on people without knowing their heart? And maybe it felt, if we did, and we realized that we did something we shouldn't have done, like of course David does after this, what we read in chapter 21, and maybe that's what he was feeling when he penned Psalm 34. And I'd like to get into that psalm here, and we'll read it. It kind of speaks for itself, but we'll read the psalm here briefly. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul will make its boast in the Lord. The humble will hear it and rejoice. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name forever. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all of my fears. So in other words, David's saying, I'm not going to do that again. You're not going to find me speaking evil or doing evil. I will serve the Lord. And it says he delivered him from all his fears. He didn't say it delivered him from King Achish. He was delivered from his fears. Verse 5, they looked to him and were radiant, and their faces will never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and rescues them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. How blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints. For those who fear him, there is no want. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger. But they who seek the Lord shall not be in want of any good thing. Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Saying, I will not be ashamed of the Lord. And we have troubles, but the Lord sees them. He's our provider. And these next verses, I want you to try to think of where you may have seen them before. At verse 12, who is the man who desires life and loves length of days that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. And we'll talk about that some here at the end as we close. Verse 15, the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against evildoers to cut off the memory of them from the earth. The righteous will cry, and the Lord hears. He delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted. He saves those who are crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. So the Lord sees the righteous and hears us. He is near to us. He delivers us from our troubles. And the good days that verse 12 refers to, that he may see good, doesn't mean we don't have afflictions, because we just were told in verse 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous. But he'll see us through them. He is our deliverer. And the psalm closes with a reference we're probably familiar of to Jesus. He keeps all his bones. Not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems the soul of his servants, and none of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. And that concludes the psalm. This reference to Jesus is quoted in the New Testament. And how fitting for a psalm of deliverance of the Lord from our fears that would conclude in the ultimate deliverance and salvation that's in Jesus. The psalms quoted that at verse 12 in 1 Peter, the third chapter. And we'll close by looking at that reference. 1 Peter chapter 3 at verse 8. To sum up, all you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for this very purpose, that you may inherit a blessing. For the one who desires life to love and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. We must turn away from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are towards the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. And do not fear their intimidation, nor be troubled, but sanctify Christ as the Lord in your hearts. I would say 8 and 9 here are very applicable these days. No doubt we will be insulted, but will we return the same when we're done, when that's done to us? You see a lot of parallels, even not the direct quote, but a lot of parallels before and after the quotation of the Psalm 34. But a big point here is, we'll get to that. you think about Peter. Peter's the one who wrote this, right, and referred to David. And did Peter do anything? Did he disguise who he was to get out of a tough spot? Of course he did at the fire right there when Jesus had been taken away. They asked if he was with them. He was one of them as well. And he said no, he denied it. So he denied that he was a follower of Jesus. He denied it three times. But he was so brave in the garden. And why did he fall back to this now? And he probably related to David here. Does anyone not desire to love life and see good days? And we're told to keep our tongue from evil, lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. Is that it? That's what we got to do? Is there not more to it? That's all we're told here. That's what we got to do. And we know this because we don't do it, and we know what it feels like when we don't do it. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? David, who was there to harm you? Achish, king of Gath, he can harm me. Peter, you see what the Romans are doing to Jesus? They could put me on the cross right beside him. There's three. Why wouldn't they release a second criminal that was going to be crucified and put me on there right beside him? The Romans, they can harm me if I do good. I could lose my job, or people could think I'm weird, speak evil of me, things that are not pleasant, but they could harm me. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? If Achish killed David and the Romans put Peter on a cross, that day they would have stood before the Lord and heard, "Well done, good and faithful servant." You really weren't harmed at all, were you? Psalm 56, the other psalm. In God I've put my trust. I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? That was helpful for you, as it was for me. I listened to it a few times after I heard it live that day. But I want to encourage everyone to heed the words of God. Keep our tongue from evil, lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and seek peace. We haven't always done that. David didn't always do that after the fact either, right? We know of the incident with Bathsheba. But even after writing this, we can have the resolve to do it again. We can turn away from evil again and seek peace and pursue it again. And that's the message I have for this morning I wanted to share with you. That's the exhortation, encouragement I wanted to bring that was helpful for me. And I know we're socially distancing, but I'd be happy to baptize somebody here. I've done it once in this one, and it was a great day. I'll mask up. I'll whatever is required. We'll make it happen, because that's the most important thing. So, and if there's any other need that you may have, maybe it's just you need to take it to the Lord on your way home or right now from your pew, so that you can seek peace, pursue it, you can see good days, and you can have the Lord's blessing, deliverance, protection. If you have any need, come as we stand and we sing.